Can you explain how this loophole works and how it's being used?
Okay. I think I would start by probably quibbling with the idea that it's a loophole because
okay.
the districts that I wrote about recently in Bridge don't consider it a loophole at all. As you probably know, and many of your listeners may know, schools have pretty wide latitude to decide who they admit via schools of choice. I mean, they only have to take them if they have capacity, et cetera, et cetera. And what happened in this case is Birmingham and Novi are two districts that have in the past not been open to schools of choice, but they still need the money. I mean, every district needs the money. And so what they decided to do was open the door, but only open it just a little crack. And so what Birmingham did was they opened six spots in the junior year of their alternative high school, I believe, alternative school. And Novi opened, I don't remember how many spots in their IB program, which is the International Baccalaureate program, but again, only in junior year. As it turned out, only one family applied for the spot in Birmingham, and nobody applied for the spots in Novi. But because they met the letter of the best practices law, they still got the $52 per pupil funding bump. And that's not per pupil who takes advantage of the schools of choice. That's per every pupil enrolled in the district. So for Birmingham, it came to about $430,000, and I think for Novi it was $230,000.
You've spoken to both districts, and what did they say about the decision to open, like you said, the door just a crack?
Well, they said, we didn't make these rules. The state made the rules. We played by them. We met the letter of the law, and that's the way it's going to be. Some people would call it gaming the system for sure. But at the same time, they're saying, again, you know, we didn't make these rules. The state made the rules, and we have met them.
Speaking of the state, are you hearing anything from folks in Lansing, from the legislature, about, you quibble with the use of the word loophole, but of the way the rules are being used?
No, not really so much. The prime group that has been inveighing against this has been the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, which simply just finds this, you know, they find this very objectionable. But in the legislature, I get the feeling that we're not talking about a great number of districts who are doing this. But, you know, no, I have not heard anything from anyone in the legislature about this.
You know, as I said, there is this larger conversation about school reform in Michigan right now. When we look at this situation, and as you were writing the article, what did you take away from this experience and what it means within the larger conversation about school reform?
Well, it's funny. A person I know in Grosse Pointe who used to be on the school board here left a comment on that story that kind of sums up what my takeaway was, which is that we talk a lot in the current Lansing culture about bringing business practices to bear on education, you know, market forces to bear, shall we say. And, you know, this is a perfect example of how a business would approach a situation like this. They would minimize their risk and maximize their return. And so what we're seeing here in a lot of ways is kind of, I don't want to call it brutal, but a certain very unsentimental application of, you know, the invisible hand of the market, I guess you'd say. Both of these districts spend a great deal more per pupil than the state foundation grant would give them if they were wide open to schools of choice. And so they see, you know, any potential kids who would attend via schools of choice as not helping them out financially. And so I think this idea that if they let kids in, they're only going to let them in for 2 years is very much kind of a cold calculation of money here.
Nancy, thanks so much for talking to us.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jen. It was great.